Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Chapter 6. The Wamping Willow. The end of the summer holidays came too quickly for Harry's liking. He was looking forward to getting back to the Hogwarts, but his month at the Burrow had been the happiest of his life. It was difficult not to feel jealous of Ron when he thought of the Dursleys and the sort of welcome he would expect next time he turned up in Prefect Drive. On the last evening, Mrs. Weasley conjured up a sumptuous dinner which included all of Harry's favorite things, ending with a mouth-watering charcoal pudding. Fred and George rounded off the evening with a display of filibuster fireworks. They filled the kitchen with red and blue stars that bounced from ceiling to wall for at least half an hour. Then it was time for a last mug of hot chocolate and bed. It took a long while to get started next morning. They were up at cock crow, but somehow they still seemed to have a great deal to do. Mrs. Weasley dashed about in a bad mood looking for spare socks and quills. People kept colliding on their stairs, half-dressed with bits of toast in their hands. And Mr. Weasley nearly broke his neck, tripping over a stray chicken as he crossed the yard, carrying Jenny's trunk to the car. Harry couldn't see how 8 people, 6 large trunks, 2 owls and a rat, were going to fit into one small Ford Anglia. He had reckoned, of course, without the special features which Mr. Weasley had added. "Not a word to Molly," he whispered to Harry as he opened the boot and showed him how it had been magically expanded so that the trunks fitted easily. When at last they were all in the car, Mrs. Weasley glanced into the back seat, where Harry, Ron, Fred, George, and Percy were all sitting comfortably side by side, and said, "Muggles do know more than we give them credit for, don't they?" She and Ginny got into a front seat which had been stretched so that it resembled a park bench.
"I mean, you never know it was this roomy from the outside, would you?"
Mr. Weasley started up the engine and they trundled out over the yard, Harry turning back for a last look at the house. He barely had time to wonder when he would see it again, when they were back. George had gotten his box of filibuster fireworks. 5 minutes after that, they skidded to a halt in the yard so that Fred would run in for his broomstick. They had almost reached the motorway when Jenny shrieked that she had left her diary. By the time she had clambered back into the car, they were running very late, and tempers were running high. Mr. Weasley glanced at his watch and then at his wife.
"Molly, dear." "No, Arthur. No one will see. This little button here is the invisibility booster I installed that'll get us up in the air. Then we fly above the clouds. We would be there in 10 minutes and no one would be any the wiser."
"I said no, Arthur. Not in broad daylight."
They reached the King's Cross at 11:15. Mr. Weasley dashed across the road to get trolleys from their trunks, and they all hurried into the station. Harry had caught the Hogwarts Express the previous year. The trick bit was getting onto platform 9¾, which wasn't visible to the muggle eye. What you had to do was walk through a solid barrier dividing platforms 9 and 10. It didn't hurt, but it had to be done carefully so that none of the muggles noticed you vanishing.
"Percy first," said Mrs. Weasley, looking nervously at the clock overhead, which showed they had only 5 minutes to disappear casually through the barrier.
Percy strode briskly forward and vanished. Mr. Weasley went next. Fred and George followed.
"I'll take Jenny, and you two came right after us."
Mrs. Weasley told Harry and Ron, grabbing Jenny's hand and setting off. In a blink of an eye, they were gone.
"Let's go together. We've only got a minute," Ron said to Harry.
Harry made sure that Hedwig's cage was safely wedged on top of his trunk and wheeled his trolley about to face the barrier. He felt perfectly confident. This was nearly as uncomfortable as using flu powder. Both of them bent low over the handles of their trolleys and walked purposely towards the barrier, gathering speed. A few feet away from it, they broke into a run and crash! Both trolleys hit the barrier and bounced backwards. Ron's trunk fell off with a loud thump. Harry was knocked off his feet and Hagrid's cage bounced onto the shiny floor and she rolled away, shrieking indignantly. People all around them stared and the guard nearby yelled,
Oi! What in blazes do you think you're doing?
Lost control of the trolley,
Harry gasped, clenching his ribs as he got up. Ron ran to pick up Hedwig, who was causing such a scene that there was a lot of muttering about cruelty to animals from the surrounding crowd.
Why can't we get through? Harry hissed to Ron.
I don't know.
Ron looked wildly around. A dozen curious people were still watching them.
We're going to miss the train,
Ron whispered.
I don't understand why the gates were sealed itself.
Harry looked up at the giant clock with a sickening feeling in the pit of his stomach. 10 seconds. 9 seconds. He wheeled his trolley forward cautiously until it was right against the barrier and pushed with all his might. The metal remained solid. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. 1 second.
It's gone, said Ron, sounding stunned. The train's left. What if Mom and Dad can't get back through to us? Have you got any muggle money?
Harry gave a hollow laugh.
The Dursleys have been pocket money for about 6 years.
Ron pressed his ear to the cold barrier.
Can't hear a thing, he said tensely. What are you going to do? I don't know how long it will take Mom and Dad to get back to us.
They looked around. People were still watching them, mainly because of Hedwig's continuing screeches.
I think we'd better go and wait by the car, said Harry.
We're attracting too much attention. Harry,
said Ron, his eyes gleaming.
The car!
What about it?
We can fly the car to Hogwarts.
But I thought, we're struck, right? And we've got to get to school, haven't we? And even underage wizards are allowed to use magic if it's real emergency. Section 19 or something of the restriction of thinking.
Harry's feeling of panic turned suddenly to excitement.
Can you fly it?
No problem,
said Ron, wheeling his trolley around to face the exit.
Come on, let's go. If we hurry, we'll be able to follow the Hogwarts Express.
And they marched off through the crowd of curious muggles, out of the station and back into the side road where the old Ford of Anglia was parked. Ron unlocked the cavernous boot with a series of taps from his wand. They heaved their trunks back in, put Hedwig on the back seat and got into the front.
Check no one's watching, said Ron, starting the ignition with another tap of his wand.
Harry stuck his head out of the window. Traffic was rumbling along the main road ahead, but their street was empty.
Okay, he said.
Ron pressed a tiny silver button on the dashboard. The car around them vanished, and so did they. Harry could feel the seat vibrating beneath him, hear the engine, feel his hands on his knees and his glasses on his nose. But for all he could see, he had become a pair of eyeballs, floating a few feet above the ground in a dingy street full of parked cars.
Let's go,
said Ron's voice from his right. The ground and dirty buildings on either side fell away, dropping out of sight as the car rose. In seconds, the whole of London lay smoky and glittering below them. Then there was a popping noise and the car, Harry and Ron, reappeared.
Oh no!
Said Ron, jabbing at the invisibility booster.
It's 40! Both of them pummeled it. The car vanished. Then it flickered back again. Hold on! Ron yelled, and he slammed his foot on the accelerator. They shot straight into the low, woolly clouds, and everything turned dull and foggy. Now what? Said Harry, blinking at the solid mass of cloud pressing in on them from all sides.
We need to see the train to know what direction to go in, said Ron.
Dip back down again, quickly. They dropped back beneath the clouds and twisted around in their seats, squinting at the ground.
I can see it, Harry yelled. Right ahead, there!
The Hogwarts Express was streaking along below them like a scarlet snake.
Due north,
said Ron, checking the compass on the dashboard.
Okay, we'll just have to check on it every half an hour or so. Hold on.
And they shot up through the clouds. A minute later, they burst out into a blaze of sunlight. It was a different world. The wheels of the car skimmed the sea of fluffy cloud, the sky a bright endless blue under the blinding white sun.
All we've got to worry about now are aeroplanes, said Ron.
They looked at each other and started to laugh. For a long time, they couldn't stop. It was as though they had been plunged into a fabulous dream. This, thought Harry, was surely the only way to travel. Past the swirls and turrets of snowy ground, in a car full of hot, bright sunlight, with a fat pack of toffees in the glove compartment, and the prospect of seeing Fred and George's jealous faces when they landed smoothly and spectacularly on the sweeping lawn in front of Hogwarts Castle. They made regular tracks on the train as they flew further and further north, each dip beneath the clouds showing them a different view. London was soon far behind them, replaced by neat green fields which gave way in turn to wide purplish moors, villages with tiny toy churches, and a great city alive with cars like multicolored ants. Several uneventful hours later, however, Harry had to admit that some of the fun was wearing off. The toffees had made them extremely thirsty, and they had nothing to drink. He and Ron had pulled off their jumpers, but Harry's t-shirt was sticking to the back of his seat, and his glasses kept sliding down to the end of his sweaty nose. He had stopped noticing the fantastic cloud shapes now, and was thinking longingly of the train miles below, where you can buy ice cream pumpkin juice from a trolley pushed by a plum witch. Why hadn't they been able to get onto platform 9 3/4?
Can't be much farther, can it?
Croaked Ron, hours later still, as the sun started to sink into the floor of cloud, straining it to a deep pink.
Ready for another check on the train?
It was still right below them, winding its way past the snow-capped mountain. It was much darker beneath the canopy of grounds. Ron put his foot on the accelerator and drove them upwards again, but as he did so, the engine began to whine. Harry and Ron exchanged nervous glances.
It's probably just tired, said Ron. It's never been this far before.
And they both pretended not to notice the whining growing louder and louder as the sky became steadily darker. Stars were blossoming in the blackness. Harry pulled his jumper back on, trying to ignore the way the windscreen wipers were now waving feebly, as though in protest.
Not far, said Ron, more to the car than to Harry. Not far now,
and he patted the dashboard nervously. When they flew back beneath the clouds a little while later, they had to squint through the darkness for a landmark they knew.
There!
Harry shouted, making Ron and Hedwig jump.
Straight ahead!
Silhouetted on the dark horizon, high on the cliff over the lake, stood the many turrets and towers of Hogwarts Castle. But the car had begun to shudder and was losing speed.
Come on!
Ron said cajolingly, giving the steering wheel a little shake.
Nearly there! Come on!
The engine groaned. Narrow jets of steam were issuing from under the bonnet.
Harry found himself gripping the edges of his seat very hard as they flew towards the lake. The car gave a nasty wobble. Glancing out of his window, Harry saw the smooth, black, glassy surface of the water a mile below. Ron's knuckles were white on the steering wheel. The car wobbled again.
"Come on!"
Ron muttered. They were over the lake. The castle was right ahead. Ron put his foot down. There was a loud clunk, a splatter, and the engine died completely.
"Oh no!"
said Ron into the silence. The nose of the car dropped. They were falling, gathering speed, heading straight for the solid castle wall.
"No!"
Ron yelled, swinging the steering wheel around. They missed the dark stone wall by inches as the car turned in a great arc, soaring over the dark green houses, then the vegetable patch, and then out over the black lawns, losing height all the time. Ron let go of the steering wheel completely and pulled his wand out of his back pocket.
"Stop! Stop!"
he yelled, whacking the dashboard and the windscreen, but they were still plummeting, the ground flying up towards them.
"Mind that tree!"
Harry bellowed, longing for the steering wheel, but too late.
Crunch!
With an ear-splitting band of metal on wood, they hit the thick tree trunk and dropped to the ground with a heavy jolt. Steam was billowing from under the crumpled bonnet. Hedwig was shrieking in terror. A golf ball-sized lump was throbbing on Harry's head where he had hit the windscreen, and to his right, Ron let out a low, despairing groan.
"Are you okay?"
Harry said urgently.
"My wand,"
said Ron in a shaky voice.
"Look at my wand."
It had snapped, almost in two. The tip was dangling limply, held on by a few splinters. Harry opened his mouth to say he was sure they would be able to mend it up at the school, but he never even got started. At that very moment, something hit his side of the car with the force of a charging ball, sending him lurching sideways into Ron, just as an equally heavy blow hit the roof.
"What's happened?"
Ron gasped, staring through the windscreen, and Harry looked around just in time to see a branch as thick as a python smashed into it. The tree they had hit was attacking them. Its trunk was bent almost a double, and its gnarled boughs were pummeling every inch of the car it could reach.
"Ah!"
said Ron, as another twisted limb punched a large dent into his door. The windscreen was now trembling under the howl of blows from knuckle-like twigs, and a branch as thick as a battering ram was pounding furiously on the roof, which seemed to be caving in.
"Run for it!"
Ron shouted, throwing his full weight against his door, but next second, he had been knocked backwards into Harry's lap by a vicious uppercut from another branch.
"We are done for!"
he moaned as the ceiling sagged. But suddenly, the floor of the car was vibrating. The engine had restarted.
"Reverse!"
Harry yelled, and the car shot backwards. The tree was still trying to hit them. They could hear its roots creaking as it almost ripped itself up, lashing out at them as they sped out of reach.
"That," panted Ron, "was close. Well done, car."
The car, however, had reached the end of its tether. With two smart clunks, the doors flew open and Harry felt his seat tip sideways. Next thing, he knew he was sprawled on the damp ground. Loud thuds told him that the car was ejecting their language from the boot. Hedwig's cage flew through the air and burst open. She rose out of it with a loud, angry screech and sped off towards the castle without a backwards look. Then, dented, scratched and steaming, the car rumbled off into the darkness, its rear lights blazing angrily.
"Come back!"
Ron yelled after it, brandishing his broken wand.
"Dad'll kill me!"
But the car disappeared from the view with one last snort from its exhaust.
"Can you believe our luck?"
said Ron miserably, bending down to pick up Scabbers the rat.
Of all the trees we could have hit, we had to get one that hits back.
He glanced over his shoulder at the ancient tree, which was still flailing its branches threateningly.
Come on, said Harry wearily. We'd better get up to the school.
It wasn't at all the triumphant arrival they had pictured. Stiff, cold, and bruised, they seized the ends of their trunks and began dragging up the grassy slope towards the great oak front doors.
I think the feast already started, said Ron, dropping his trunk at the foot of the front steps and crossing quietly to look through a brightly lit window.
Hey, Harry, come and look, it's the sorting.
Harry hurried over, and together, he and Ron peered in at the great hall.